This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Jeff Kosis. Jeff is the Senior Procurement Executive for the General Services Administration. And Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. It's a great pleasure to join you today.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation. Jeff, when I think about it, and I think we were talking before the show started, is, you know, we both started at GSA in 1987. And look what where we are now, huh? So I thought maybe, you know, a little bit about your background, what you've done at GSA, and, you know, first of all, how did you end up at GSA? I have my story. I'd love to hear yours again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Roger. Graduated college, had my majors in history and political science, and not a clue what to do with it. And so being a political science major, figured, okay, I'm going to go to Washington, look around, find something. Well, as soon as I got here, I found out that the General Services Administration was hiring an agency that, frankly, I had never heard of before, but moved down here, started within 3 weeks, and was almost immediately assigned into buying furniture on behalf of the federal government. But what I found, and the reason that I stayed with GSA all these years, was it was such an incredible variety of different services, products, and opportunities. And what I found is, when I'd read about something going on across the U.S. government, that we had a role in it. Somehow, behind the scenes, we were making something happen, making something work. And that was so exciting that I stayed with the agency and continued moving my way up through the organization. After starting in services in the early 90s, when that organization first started, and GSA was looking to expand that, I had the opportunity to work in acquisition policy, in contract management, and then had the great privilege of leading a number of these strategic sourcing initiatives, as well as the schedules program and creating OASIS. And then when I saw the senior procurement executive opportunity come open, figured what a great chance to really try and propel some things forward.
Well, we're going to talk about the things you want to propel forward. But Jeff, I have to tell you, I have the same story. I went to law school. I was a history and government major. We call it government, not political science. And wanted to come to Washington, just came here, started interviewing, didn't know anything about GSA or government contracts, got hired, spent 20 years there. And it sounds like a lot of the same things. I mean, I really enjoyed the opportunities because you got to do many different things. And to your point, I think, and it's a great point, and people forget about it, is GSA plays a role behind the scenes in all kinds of government missions across the board, whether it's supporting Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, you know, HHS. GSA, frankly, touches every agency out there and supports the missions in many different ways that people, I think, goes underappreciated. So, listening to you talk about it, I was just remembering my time, and, you know, I had the same experiences, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. So, but now let's turn to your priorities and what you'd like to accomplish, as you've been senior procurement executive now for how long?
Almost 5 months now. And I'm bringing three major priorities with me. I think it's critical that we actually have a clear area of focus, know what we're going to try and accomplish, because the challenge is that we're so easily pulled into a whole variety of different directions. So the three priorities that I've set out are, first and foremost, building and developing the acquisition workforce. Secondly, trying to concentrate on better, more effective buying, both figuring out how my office can leverage that within the agency and how we set up GSA to do so across government. And third, strengthening and improving the state of our industry relationships, an area that to some degree has gotten a bit off course in recent years, and an opportunity to really emphasize and bring that back so that all three tie together for me. I always put the acquisition workforce first because I think that's where the whole game starts. If we have the right acquisition workforce, if we set them up to talk with industry, if we have some open and full communication across the process, I think that's what leads us to smart and effective buying relationships.
Okay, so you're telling me these are, I mean, I agree with you. They are interrelated. They're the, you know, sort of, you can't do one without the other. You got to have, you know, invest in the professionalism of the acquisition workforce, because that's who's going to be doing the buying for you. And it is, and you can't do buying without the private sector. You just got to have those relationships. Can we start by talking about the acquisition workforce? And I guess my first question for you is, you know, what's your assessment? Where is GSA with regard to its acquisition workforce right now?
Great. I think that's absolutely the place to start. Across GSA, our extended acquisition workforce is about 7,500 when we include both the contract specialists, the program managers, the COTARs, the leasing contracting officers, and so forth. The core 1102 workforce is about 1,550 folks at present. We've seen a couple of things that I think tell us we're in for some very interesting and challenging times ahead. Over the last 5 years, we've had about a 39% attrition rate. We have an 18% vacancy rate right now in our 1102 community. What that's telling us, among other things, is that we're really on the cusp of a generational transition. We're seeing a lot of the baby boomers retiring. We're seeing a lot of millennials enter the workforce. And that's leading us to rethink all kinds of things about how do we train, how do we develop, how do we give these folks the right tools? How do we tie social media into where we're going with acquisition? We do a regular workforce competency survey through the Federal Acquisition Institute. And I think the findings were pretty revealing, both on the strengths that we have and on what our folks saw as their greatest competency gaps. A couple that they really saw at the top of the list of competency gaps included protests, it included e-business and acquisition systems, and it included socioeconomic and small business. So when we're talking about the workforce, and when we're talking about better buying, and when we're talking about industry relationships, those are themes that I think we want to come back to again and again.
And, you know, with regard to what you're doing, how is that? I know you're, as someone who worked at GSA, you're in central office now. And I put central office in quotes right now because everybody's in central office, right? but, you know the dynamic, the central office versus the services. That's the way it always used to be characterized, especially, you know, with FSS and then FDS that were separate services and sort of that, you know, tension between the two. So how are you, what are you doing to work with FAS and PBS to address the workforce?
I'd actually add a third component to that. We've got, as you say, Federal Acquisition Service, Public Building Service, and then we have internal acquisition, because internally, GSA spends over $8 billion a year. And so part of what I do is every 2 weeks, I meet with the heads of acquisition management for those two services, as well as for internal acquisition. And almost every conversation comes right back to the needs of the acquisition workforce. Recently, our administrator signed an order addressing the flow of contracting authority across the agency. Under this order, procurement authority now goes from the administrator to the chief acquisition officer and me, and then in turn, I've redelegated that to the commissioners and authorized them to redelegate down one level. What that does is it gives us a much better reach into the regions so that we can use both our central office and regional relationships to give the HCAs across the agency some consistent guidance and have ongoing conversations. A key thing I've started is bi-monthly meetings with the HCAs across the agency, where we've begun talking about what are the needs of the acquisition workforce across the organization, and where we give the regions the chance to share their stories, their challenges, what's working, what's not working in both the acquisition workforce itself and in the broader challenges of acquisition of today.
So it sounds like that, you know, that delegate, I mean, people, where it's really, you know, that's sort of a really technical GSA thing, but really you're talking about a flows of responsibility and changing the chain so that there's more accountability through, you know, through a central sort of office in a certain sense, right? Rather than when, like you and I started at GSA, it was very stovepipe, right? Each region did its own thing. They had its own sort of contracting approach. And that still remains, I'm glad you're addressing it, because that remains a concern that lots of folks have about disparate treatment across, you know, the various regions.
That's exactly correct. yes, it is a technical issue, but you picked up on why it's so important. Because by having a consistent flow of contracting authority, we're able to set some uniform direction across the nation, not with the idea that Washington always knows the answers, but rather that we can facilitate the conversation and then we can set off on a joint direction where we're all traveling together with common goals, common metrics, and common operating principles.
Right. And that flow of responsibilities and delegations creates accountability up the
exactly.
chain. So they do have to communicate with each other, right?
Right.
Creates
right.
that structure.
With, right. Without that flow, we wouldn't have the ability to actually have everybody moving in a common direction. So right. it was a hugely important change and one that I think is going to give us a lot of long-term benefit.
Right. Now, Jeff, we'd have to take our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Jeff Kosis. He is the Senior Procurement Executive for the General Services Administration, and we'll continue a little bit on acquisition workforce, and then maybe we'll start talking about building healthy and productive industry relationships, priority, the second or third priority, whichever. I want to do that one first and then get on to buying smarter, because I think those two add together equals buying smarter, acquisition workforce and improving industry relations. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jeff Kosis. Jeff is the Senior Procurement Executive for the General Services Administration. And Jeff, when we took the first break, we were talking about the acquisition workforce. And you talked about the competency surveys that you've done with the folks. You talked about the restructuring of the delegation of authority and how that's sort of creating a more focused organization that, communicates across the regions and that sort of thing, which is all good. One question, the follow-up is, what else are you doing potentially, and are you putting together metrics or how are you going to measure progress? So that's two questions, actually. What else are you doing?
We're doing a whole host of other things with the acquisition workforce. One of the most important ones was that we've recently taken an opportunity to pause, step back, and rethink the way that we're approaching our procurement management reviews. The idea of a procurement management review is to go in to look and ensure that we are complying with the rules that we're establishing and awarding effective contracts. But having come in from the operational side of the house, I wasn't convinced that we were focusing on the right issues and that we were using those as an opportunity to train and to develop the acquisition workforce. So we took a step back and tried to make sure that we are built around the four cornerstones in that from GAO, which are the different key areas to emphasize. What we found is that we didn't put enough attention on the acquisition workforce. We assessed ourselves as doing really wonderfully in that arena, but we didn't actually have the right metrics. So we've rethought that, and we've put in place now a series of key acquisition metrics. Those include acquisition workforce job satisfaction coming out of the Federal Employee Viewpoints Survey. It includes the acquisition workforce engagement rate. It includes turnover of acquisition professionals and knowing how are we situated compared with other federal agencies. It includes the vacancy rate. So it's a series of different metrics that are really designed to say, is our acquisition workforce engaged? Are they enjoying their job? Are they finding it rewarding? Do they feel that they are growing and learning? Or are we losing them to other agencies? Are they saying that they're disinterested? We think by focusing on these issues, by discussing them across our heads of contracting activity, that we can ensure that we're moving to be the premier destination for an acquisition professional in and across government.
And along those lines, listening to you, I was thinking about the various contract types that GSA awards, whether it's a GSA schedule, which is a certain type, or, actually you have folks that compete task orders on behalf of their agencies or for GSA. You mentioned $8 billion in GSA spend, or doing task order competitions or awarding contracts, doing Part 15 type procurements, awarding the OASIS contract. Do you see any in the future any opportunity for people to move around a little bit more and do other things?
Very definitely. Earlier, I was talking about the millennials coming into the GSA acquisition workforce and really coming in across government. What we see over and over again is the expectation that a lot of the younger generation is going to want to stay in the job about 2 to 3 years. One of the really cool things about GSA is there is such an incredible assortment of different opportunities, different types of acquisition, As you indicated, everything from construction and leasing to the schedules to creating government-wide contracts, that the chance to retain them by letting them experience different types of acquisition is one of the great things about GSA and very much where we're trying to gear things.
Okay, and another area that I wanted to ask you about is, and maybe I'm trying to phrase the question, there's a lot of focus these days or talk about solutions and requirements development and that sort of thing. And that all leads to sound competitions. And are you looking at, with your COs and your acquisition workforce, are you looking at, sort of the bid rate or things that try to enhance competition, whether it's sound requirements development or how the procurement structured, those acquisition strategies at the beginning?
Oh, very definitely. As part of the presence management agenda, there's a whole host of benchmarking efforts going on right now. And part of that, they have us looking at competition rate and at the one bid rate. That's in some ways the one that I'm actually more concerned about, because if we go out and we say we're going after competition and yet we only get one bid, something is wrong in the process. We've seen different agencies take a host of different approaches to try and increase true competition going on. One of the things that I think is hugely valuable is if we bring industry into this conversation. And therefore, I've talked with several contractors who are interested in coming in and presenting for our workforce a training session really focused on, from the industry perspective, what goes into a bid, no bid decision. I think if we can give that information, if we can have our COs understand how industry thinks about that, how the way that we post an RFQ can affect that, how the way we treat questions can affect that, those perceptions, that we may have the opportunity to really increase our effective competition rate. It's an example of why I think that the industry partnerships that I spoke of earlier are so important to us.
Hey, and you know what, Jeff? That's a great segue. So we can talk. We might be going a little bit out of order. I mean, I have them listed: acquisition, workforce, smart and effective buying, and healthy, productive industry relations. But let's talk about number three: healthy, productive industry relations. And I think you've touched on it, but I just want to ask you again: why is that so important? Can you explain that for our listening audience, for the taxpayer, for customer agency? Why is it so important?
Certainly, at the most central, if we can engage industry early in the process, I think we're more likely to, one, get better requirements defined, two, more likely to have effective competition, and three, we're more likely to be able to say and demonstrate that we've had a fair, open, and transparent process. I think all wins. So by building protocols to bring industry into the conversation, I think that our acquisition always gets better.
Right, and leads to better outcomes, ultimately.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the bottom line, right? If you have better requirements development, more engagement. So from your perspective, and think about what your vision is for improving it, talk about what you plan on doing, what does it mean for contractors, what does it mean for customer agencies?
Sure. Well, one of my first moves was to appoint our first procurement ombudsman, Melissa Gary, who now kind of serves as that central clearinghouse. GSA, like any big bureaucracy, it can be hard to navigate the organization to ensure that an issue, a concern, is heard by the right person. So by naming a procurement ombudsman, we've really set somebody in a position to ensure that the issues are heard, are considered, and land in the right party's lap to be resolved. Melissa's not going to be able to answer every issue. That's not her job. But she can steer people through GSA and make sure that we think and consider the issue fairly. I've been traveling the regions, and one of the key talking points I emphasize is the importance of industry engagement. OMB has done absolutely a fabulous job in presenting this in terms of their Mythbusters campaign. And so I've been really trying to share the same message in probably slightly different words, but emphasizing why it's so important that we regularly listen to, engage industry from the outset of major competition. I've also made very clear to the major industry associations my interest in hearing their views, in inviting them to come in to talk to me, to tell me what's working, what's not working. And we treat that as an opportunity for my staff and I to further consider issues that may help us to update practices, to bring more velocity and agility into our contracting process.
And Jeff, I have to say, I'm going to have to laud you for appointing the ombudsman. We've already seen that openness and willingness to engage, you know, have a positive impact for everybody, you know, not one side or the other, but, you know, trying to have a dialogue and improve that communication so there's better understanding as a facilitator. I think it's a great thing. Now, with regard to the ombudsman that you've appointed, now, do you see, you know, because other organizations like FAS have, you know, I think in some of the centers there have potentially an industry liaison. Are you seeing that? I think the IT center is doing that sort of thing. Are they sort of following your lead here?
Oh, that's absolutely the concept, is that we start with one procurement ombudsman for the agency, and then Melissa works through liaisons within FAS, within PBS, within the services. We don't have all of those stood up yet, but we're absolutely marching in that direction, because that's a great way to also understand what are the common challenges that industry is presenting to us. Because when we hear that, it's a great opportunity to say, hey, we need to put together a training session. We need to emphasize policy. We need in some other way to address a fair and valid concern. Or we need to recognize we've just been handed an opportunity to make something work better. So yeah, it very much is Melissa works with a team of liaisons across the agency.
Okay. And Jeff, right now we have to take our next break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Jeff Kosis. He is the Senior Procurement Executive for the General Services Administration. And we'll continue our discussion of industry relationships and then move on to smart and effective buying. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jeff Kosis. He is the Senior Procurement Executive at the General Services Administration. And Jeff, you talked about the ombudsman last segment. You talked about, the importance of outreach with regard to industry and how that can lead to better outcomes. Are there other things that GSA is considering? I know you mentioned in the first segment, you mentioned social media and what the millennials like, love that stuff. So, you know, what are you guys doing with regard to social media? I think that's an area that you're doing, that I see a lot of stuff coming out.
Oh, very definitely. And social media plays a huge role both in our industry relationships and in our efforts towards better buying. In the industry relationship side, we're using social media as part of our vendor engagement and outreach strategy. I think GSA has really been out in front with sites such as GSA Interact and with the ability to establish a variety of communities. When we were moving forward with OASIS, I think we did several things that worked really well in helping drive a better acquisition solution. Our program manager, Jim Galone, was blogging weekly, not only putting out information, but eliciting information, asking different questions, posting different strawmen to try and gauge reaction and to try and refine the procurement. We used Interact as the opportunity to do things such as answer about 2,000 questions and comments that came in response to the draft solicitation. We used that as a clearinghouse so that we invited industry to come into the table for one-on-one meetings. Now, as you can imagine, Roger, a lot of folks want to come in, talk to us, share different perspectives. So we found we needed the equivalent of charging admission to get in the door. Our equivalent was a white paper based on a topic that we had posted on Interact, a key aspect of the acquisition, where we said, hey, come in, tell us your answer to this set of questions that would make for a better acquisition. You know, I don't want companies to come in and tell me their corporate history, their marketing campaign. I want to understand how we should approach the acquisition challenge immediately in front of us. And so we used Interact and a host of other social media tools towards that end. Even during the recent strategic sourcing efforts, we took that a step further. What we did was said, hey, this is a great chance to push information out. And when we have a large audience, potentially a lot of new folks new to government contracting, we can do some level setting and share information. So this past winter, we even held two virtual pre-solicitation conferences. Now, I'd love to tell you that we were brilliant and saw this coming, but somehow the two dates we picked both ended up with snowstorms in the D.C. area. And so we ended up—
There was a lot of snow last year, Jeff.
There was. Yes, there was a lot of snow, 11 snow days in this county school system. But somehow we had picked 2 days for pre-solicitation conferences when the federal buildings were closed. But because we had done it virtually, we were able to proceed, hold the conference, and hopefully most of the attendees around the country had no idea that the federal buildings were closed. So social media, to me, poses a lot of opportunities to improve and advance vendor engagement. It doesn't replace the need for one-on-one conversations, but it can open the door to them and to make them more effective.
Lessons learned from that engagement with OASIS, I guess my question for you is, in terms of the feedback and the conversation back and forth through Interact or through questions and that sort of thing, was that really robust? I mean, I always hear from companies and some occasions that, hey, look, I can't say anything as an individual when it's got my representing my company because I'd have to go through internally, like the government does, and get it vetted or approved before I could do it. By that time, that's too late. What did you guys see in terms of that traffic?
We certainly heard some of that from some companies. We had a fair number of people who submitted comments from personal emails with that as the specific concern. But we also found a lot of companies were able to participate. And we found that we saved ourselves from a number of mistakes based on the dialogue. We saw opportunities to advance and improve the caliber of it. So overall, we saw it as really successful. And the overwhelming majority of the feedback was very positive on use of that as part of our social media strategy.
And I see, with the Align follow-on, or Align 2, and the Align Small Business 2, the same sort of model is sort of taking shape. Is that correct?
Oh, very definitely. The Align team has been having some good conversations with the OASIS team, understanding, hey, what were the good practices that were employed here? Now, how do we replicate or expand or even improve those in the next major acquisition? So hopefully it's the start of a virtuous circle here.
Okay, so I have one other question for you, too. You've talked a little bit about social media, the ombudsman. Are you playing a role? Because I think this is a very positive thing that industry is seeing, is like the potential consolidation of the professional services schedules. Do you see a same sort of model in terms of outreach to industry to get observations, views? Because that's going to be a Herculean effort to try to, combine all the solicitations and then, migrate the contracts where companies want to a single. Are you going to do the same sort of model or what?
Absolutely. I think there will be a ton of interest and focus on that. Tiffany Hickson, who is the category manager now for professional services and OASIS, had the opportunity to see how well that model worked on OASIS and some of the strategic sourcing efforts. And I know she's looking at how does she have a very broad and inclusive strategy here, and how can she use social media as part of that? So yeah, I'd expect her to follow a very similar model for making sure that there's an open dialogue, that there's a path to come in for more detailed discussions so that we can float different ideas, validate some make sense, take some goofy ideas out of the running fairly quickly.
Now, do you see, I ask this question, and because the ombudsman, the liaisons and that sort of thing, is that sort of addressing the issue that the IG raised in that audit about, potential improper management, interference in contracts? Is that, is this designed in part to address those kind of concerns as well? So it has both a external audience and an internal audience at GSA?
Sure, to some degree. I think it's important when we look at the IG audit to emphasize that what I told our workforce is nobody should tell a CO to sign a contract that he or she would not be willing to sign themselves. And to me, it's really that simple. If we have a manager who's comfortable, who's willing to sign the contract, go ahead and sign it. We don't want anybody influencing our CEOs positively or negatively, but we do want sound management oversight. We want thoughtful contracts. We want people understanding why is this a good deal or not a good deal. And we want people getting the right feedback from their supervisory chain as part of that process.
Right. And, that's all a part of smart and effective buying. And you know what, Jeff, we have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll talk about priority. It's not number three. It's ultimately the goal, right? Smart, effective buying for the taxpayer. We'll talk about that in our last segment. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jeff Kosis. Jeff is the Senior Procurement Executive for the General Services Administration. And we have talked a lot about the acquisition workforce, Jeff. We've talked about the importance and your goals in building a healthy, productive industry relationship. And, you know, the other thing you're trying to do, which those two things lead to, is promote smart and effective buying. And in that regard, you know, what are some of the other things that you're doing to try to promote, you know, smart and effective buying?
Several, Roger. Let me start where we left off, though, talking in the social media space. One of the things that we learned as a result of a comprehensive review of acquisition across the agency is that we had about 50 different policy sites between central office and the regions, and we put our folks in an absolutely impossible position. So earlier this year, we stood up one central acquisition portal for the agency, trying to drive all people to one data source and to ensure that we are starting to put out clear, consistent, and consumable policy. And by consumable, I'm talking policy through multiple channels, given in ways that different generations are looking to see, understand, and receive the information. One of the key things that I've just added there, though, is our first two visualization tools, and I'm particularly excited about these. The first one is for the acquisition workforce to help us with the socioeconomic challenge. What we did is we took the data from FPDS's report on contract actions, from SBA's dynamic search engine, and we overlaid both against a United States map. What it does is it lets our contracting officers now drill down by PSC or NAICS, but also by geography, and find out, is there a hub zone firm in a certain area? Is this a firm who's done business with my agency, with another agency, or are they a new entrant to government procurement? Similarly, we've just unveiled a visualization tool for our competition advocates so that they can actually see for their region or for their office, what is their competitive one-bid rate? More than that, what type of contracts is it for, and when does that contract next expire? It gives our competition advocates something to focus on, and it's been led to the start of a really good dialogue with them, as we're now asking questions such as, how do we bring more visibility to this? How do we let industry know that the last time this went out, we only got one bid? How do we send a message that we're really interested in increasing competition? You know, so to be able to move from, I don't know what our situation is, I don't know why we have one bid or where it is, to now having that information at somebody's fingertips that they can dial it up, they can look at it, they can sort it in a host of ways. To me, that's the power of what visualization tools are just starting to do for acquisition. It's very much in its infancy today, but I think we're in for a really exciting time as we figure out ways to integrate some of the new technology into the way that we do our job.
Okay, and so in that case, you can use that data to identify trends or where there's potential problems, and that's an indicator that leads people to dig down and take a look, like, why is it happening in this particular reason? Why am I, you know, why is this operational unit, you know, getting just one bids all the time, that kind of thing, right?
Right, and so our operational units can compare themselves to other regions or to other organizations around the country, and if Region 25 sees that their competition rate is 50% and that Region 30's competition rate is only 8%, you know, we can certainly start sharing and modeling practices.
Right. Those are new regions.
Yes,
right?
They are, because I'm not picking on any real region today.
I got it. So another, I guess, part of this is my impression, and I'd get your thoughts on it, is prices paid data is, you know, in terms of, we hear a lot about GSA looking, and OMB, you know, want to collect prices paid data in order to better understand the market, that sort of thing. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. We found tremendous value from prices paid data. As we're starting to understand the prices and terms and conditions as to how and why we're buying, we're able to start asking ourselves some questions. What is actually driving the cost? And often, as you know, Roger, it's not the contract that drives the cost. It's the requirements. It's the behavior of the program offices. It's the setup. So we've learned a lot through the transactional data that we've collected over the last couple of years through our strategic sourcing efforts. We're able to take that data in our Express package delivery, and we've learned how often we were overnighting a package across the Potomac. That we would send a package from Arlington to D.C. By way of Louisville. And that is incredibly expensive. And we learned the same types of lessons over and over in each of the strategic sourcing solutions. We've learned how many cell phone minutes that we never use, we're paying for, and the cell phone is sitting in somebody's desk. So collecting this transactional data, it is hugely valuable for us.
And I understand that for managing it. Are you, when you talk about prices paid data, and I didn't get it, but are you going to be collecting that information, that's the requirements, that's the terms and conditions? Because that, because price alone is incomplete. It doesn't tell you the story. I mean, I agree with you, and I think there's things that can definitely pay big dividends, like cell phone minutes and that sort of thing. And you also have a much smaller set of suppliers there that you have to manage. But, you know, in terms of that information beyond just price, how are you going to collect that, or what are you going to do to manage that information? Because that drives the decisions of how many bids you get and what the price you're going to pay.
Absolutely. Terms and conditions absolutely have to be part of it. If we just have raw pricing data, it doesn't tell us enough. But the specific elements that we need, some are going to be common for every solution. You know, who bought what for how much, when. So there's some commonality, but then there's some things that are very different if we're dealing with complex professional services than if we're dealing with basic commodities. And so much of that takes us right back to the idea of the industry engagement, of talking about, here are our goals. This is what we're trying to do with the transactional data. Here's why we want to use it. Here's what we think is our starting point, and to ask questions. Is this data indeed commercially collected? Are we asking for something that's a huge burden to provide? And if so, why do we really need that data? Is there an alternative way that gets us to some of those end results?
Okay, that's really good. I appreciate that. Are there other aspects of what you're doing with regard to smart and effective buying that, you know, that you want to share? I mean, one thing I wanted to ask you before we go, so we're getting down to the time, is in terms of like the GSAR and rewriting the GSAR. I mean, that's something that I have to say. It was sort of started back when I was still at GSA in 2006 and 7. And there's been fits and starts there, and some pieces have. Is that something you're tackling as well?
Very fair point. We actually have looked, and we have a 10-year backlog in GSAR cases. And so that let us say, you know, why did that happen? How do we fix the situation? And we recognized it largely happened because we were so focused in our role in the FAR, in being part of the FAR Council and being the FAR Secretariat in moving those rules. So one key thing we did was to establish a GSA acquisition division to focus on the internal needs. More than that, though, we said, you know, we cannot catch up on 10 years worth of cases in a single year. We've got to prioritize. We've got to be specific. Which cases are we trying to move, and what is our strategy for moving those? So we picked 13 cases for this year that we're trying to move forward. We set a goal based across 22 different process steps of having a rule go from a concept to a final rule, and set and track against those metrics to ensure that we're moving. Last quarter, we actually had 5 different rules hit publication, either in proposed or final status, which is 3 more than we had all of the year before. So I think we're on a better path, but it is going to take us time to dig all the way out through the backlog we're dealing with.
Right. And I think that can't be underestimated, because unlike, you know, GSA's, those regulations have an impact on, you know, government-wide programs that count for tens of billions of dollars in spend, whether it's the GSA schedules program, right? And those regulations, that's a 50, if you count VA, that's a $50 billion program. And it has, you know, and it has ramifications for states that actually have their own multiple award schedules based on the GSA schedule, or use the GSA schedules as a baseline for, you know, their contracts. I mean, so it has a huge impact. So I'm glad you are focusing on that. And Jeff, with that, you know what? We're at the end of the show today. We could probably do another show. I'll have to have you back in the fall. After the end of the fiscal year, when you talk about, you know, the progress you've made on these sort of 3 priorities.
Sounds great.
Okay. I want to thank my guest, Jeff Kosis. He is the Senior Procurement Executive of the General Services Administration. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf. Only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.